This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Cliff Simpson
and Pat Hennigan,
Jeff Brennan,
and I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, now Cliff, in your youth, before you came to the Manawatu, you had a few achievements in sport, didn't you?
Oh, yes, I was fortunate enough when I was at high school. I think sport became more of a feature than my schooling. And so I for some reason, I just had that ability to be able to do that. Yeah. And I think one of the things that helped me with regard to that was the fact that when we went to Dunedin first, I used to do a paper run. Mm. And used to carry 100-something papers on my back up a hill. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty steep going too. Is that... Yeah. And of course, I think that made me physically strong. Mm. To be able to do that. Very strong in the legs.
Okay. So what sport did you do at school?
Oh, athletics and rugby.
Okay.
They were the only two. Well, you don't... I was pretty keen on cricket too, but when you take on one sport in particular, like athletics,
okay,
you never seem to have time for cricket, because cricket is an all-day thing, you see.
Yes, yeah. So what aspect of athletics?
Quarter and half mile in particular.
Yeah.
Middle distance, they called that.
Yeah.
We used to have, there was three sections. There was junior, went through the junior section, intermediate and senior. So, and that's where my main interest came in, when I won some inter-secondary school events. Mm-hmm. And it went on from there. After leaving school, I joined an athletic club and in Dunedin and just carried on from there.
Okay. Mm. Now, I know in sort of after the Second World War, well, in fact, sometime later after that, issues of the nature of training and development, sort of, developments there. Did you have a lot of specialist training, or was it the just gather
no,
up?
No, in the first instance, we just got out there and ran, you know, ran round and round.
Yeah.
But as time went by, and this is mainly with returned soldiers coming back too from the war.
Yeah.
They were joining in the clubs, and they had better training methods, because I suppose being in the army, that's where they learnt to do that.
Yeah.
And of course that sort of filtered through. Mm. And we went on from there. And eventually I got a chap that used to look after me too. And he'd been in the Empire Games, the 1938 Empire Games, and they were held in Sydney.
Okay, and the Empire Games is what later became the
Commonwealth Games. That's right.
Yeah.
That's dead right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm. So he was in the Empire Games, and after the war,
he really
were in
became
the same club as him.
But he had given up athletics then, but he used to just spend his time training us.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. He was marvellous.
What was his name?
Tyree, Harold Tyree.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And he'd represented New Zealand in the
in 38,
Empire Games.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So how far did you get in your athletics?
Oh, well, I never really had a few wins too. We had one or two teams that came out from Australia. And I remember the first one that I, and this is before I got into the Empire Games team, when I was picked to run for Otago against this chap, he was from Sydney, I think, and he was the Australian half mile champion.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And anyway, next thing I had a ring to say that would I care to turn up to come to Invercargill and race against this chap Marks, John Marks. Mm-hmm. Was his name, and he yep. said about going down to Invercargill. That was a late afternoon meeting, and anyway, went down there, and it was a hang of a cold night. Ooh, a real cold southerly wind. When they got cold down there, you got cold.
Yeah.
And anyway, I thought, now by Jove, this is going to suit me better than it'll suit him with the cold, with the real cold like that.
So, had you met him before? Or
no, I
hadn't. No, okay, total stranger.
Yeah.
Or you'd heard about him at all?
Oh, I did. I had heard about him, yeah.
And what was his reputation then, was it?
Well, he was the Australian half-mile champion.
Yeah.
But other than that, no, I don't think he'd...
His times, did you know? Or?
Yeah, well, yes, I knew what times he'd done.
And how did they compare to...
Oh, well, I thought, well, I've got a chance, you know,
if
things go right.
Yeah.
And anyway, I thought, now, what am I going to do with this? I thought, well, the ordinary thing might not work here. So I think...
The ordinary thing is
the ordinary thing
you
of
just going
run just
as running fast
around,
as you can.
Around, and then lining up at the finish and getting there. So I thought, now I'll have a go at about 220 yards out and really go to town as best I could.
Yeah.
And of course, you've got to come around the bend and then jump back into the straight. And... Anyway, I jumped him on the 220 mark and it caught him by surprise, you see. Next thing, I was about 5 or 6 yards ahead of him before he realised, and he never caught me.
Okay.
And I won the blooming thing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Wow. Fantastic.
Yeah. Yes. So I was pretty happy about that. And that was on a Tuesday night, and then on the Saturday, we had a rematch in Dunedin on the Saturday.
Yeah.
And... I thought, now I wonder what's going to happen here. So I didn't really have to wonder. He went about 300 yards out.
Did he?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so you didn't go early then?
No, I didn't go early, but he did.
Yeah.
You see, he went about 300 yards out.
Yeah.
Which is an awful long way.
Yes.
And
well, except you went to 220 the previous time and you held on. So
yes, I held on.
Yeah.
Just held on.
Yeah.
And you know, I got him with about the last 10 yards.
Okay,
I just nudged ahead. I've got a photo somewhere of that too. I'll show you. Oh, so, no, I won't be able to show you, but...
So he went too early.
you could say that.
He was getting tied up.
Yes, great fellow too. I got a great old chat with him later.
Yeah.
Nice fellow. Mm. Yeah.
Okay, so then you went to the Empire Games, yeah.
Well, yes, and I was, well, yes, and then we went into a test match situation where the whole Australian team pulled together. There was a North Island group and a South Island group, and there was another chap, White, that was the there was another good quarter and half miler, and he was running in this race, and he actually beat us, beat me.
Yeah.
And there was another chap that was doing pretty well. Oh, I was trying to think of his name now. Anyway, it'll come to me. But anyway, this chap White was too good for us on the day.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now it won't show on a sound recording, but you have on the table here, are those some medals that you won?
Yes, yeah, there are various medals here. There's a the Empire Games medal there, competitor's medal.
Yeah.
And then I think there's one that when we ran against the one against Australia was there. I think I might have might become, it's got the wrong initials on one of them too, but that doesn't matter. And there's that, and then there's two New Zealand Championship medals there.
Mm.
And I think the other one of them was was one of the Otago Otago Championship one, and then there's one of Christchurch one too.
Mm-hmm.
I forget about them now. Yes, there's the two New Zealand Championship ones.
Yeah.
And this is the one that against Australia.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, that's a Canterbury one. And that was the time. And that one was when Roger Bannister was out here, and he's the bloke Roger Bannister.
Amazing.
He hadn't, at that time, he hadn't, when he was here, he hadn't broken the world record.
Yeah. Mm. So how long did you carry on with your athletics?
Oh, I didn't compete once we shifted up here to the North Island.
Mm.
I think it was mainly because once I'd bought that property at Halcombe, I was sort of not the right environment for me to, you know, to do both. So I just sort of played a bit of rugby and that sort of thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could you go back to that rugby, Cliff? I remember you saying you were captain of the first 15 at your high school.
It was always
a big thing.
The intersectional school games. They were marvellous.
Yeah.
That was some of the best rugby I think I ever played in, really.
Yes.
In those, when we had those. We used to play against Timaru Boys High School and Otago Boys High School, Waitaki Boys High School, Southland Boys High School. You know, those, and they were great games to play in.
Yeah.
And who were you playing for?
For Kings. For Kings.
Okay.
Yeah, Kings High School, not Kings College.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so.
And then you carried on up here with your rugby, didn't you?
Played for a few games for Otago when I was down there.
But
I was playing in South Otago then. We had South Otago rugby was very, very strong. Yeah. And we had several All Blacks there.
Did you?
Yeah, in that same team. There was. Oh.
Any of the Kearneys?
No, Kearneys never. No, they were more Central Otago. This was South Otago. There was Charlie Willicks, who was a lock forward, and then there was the Hague boys, Jimmy and Bert Hague, and who else was there too? That was it doesn't matter the time. So I was lucky enough to be able to play a few games for Otago. I never played many games. Otago rugby was very strong, and I think the reason why I got into to play a few games for Otago, they had a Northern Tour, and they picked the team to go to the Northern Tour, and I wasn't in it. But I suppose I was the next best bet for who should be in the team to stay at home. Yeah.
So what position did you play then?
I was playing fullback then.
Fullback,
yeah.
And were you the goal kicker?
Yes, yes, I did all the goal kicking. Yeah. Yeah, Fleets. I had some great stories about goal kicking too. I remember going to Invercargill once and playing for Otago Country against Southland Country. I used to pick country teams and town teams. And anyway, it was nil all in this game against Southland Country. And I got a penalty, almost right on time. And it rained right throughout the game. It was that wet. And of course those old leather balls in those days.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was hard to get the blooming thing over the bar.
Yeah. Yeah.
And anyway, they called me up to have a go at this jolly penalty. Oh, it was a bit, not that far out really. It would be out 30 yards out, I suppose. And the jolly thing hit the crossbar and went over. And we won the game
3-0. Oh, wow. You'd be the hero.
Yeah. And there was another time we were playing against Southland Boys High School there, that they had a bloke that played for the South Island in their team as a schoolboy.
Gosh.
Chip Walker, E.G. Walker. But oh, we couldn't handle him as a schoolboy. But I got the ball once there in Rugby Park, Invercargill. And I got the ball, and anyway, the captain said, "Have a go, have a drop, Cliff." And this was from about 40 yards out, and the blooming thing went over.
Oh,
it was the best blooming drop goal I'd ever had. Yeah.
And then you carried on with that when you came up to fielding.
Well, yes, I played for fielding old boys here.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what was social life like when you were working here? You had some rugby, you had your own farm that you were building up, you had a family growing up.
Yes,
at the same time.
Yeah, yes.
Did that give you much free time to socialise?
Did they what?
Did that give you much free time for socialising, or were there other clubs or organisations?
Well, we made our own fun, all right.
Yeah.
Used to get into a little bit of trouble, perhaps on a Friday, you come to the sale here and get into the old Denby Hotel there. And
Was this 6 o'clock swill?
Yes.
So what was that bad, or did it simply mean people were out on the street earlier and got home rather than getting drunk at 10 and 11 o'clock at night?
A lot of blokes used to take their flagons and fill their flagons up and have a couple of flagons inside a little carry bag.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And they'd waddle off home with those.
Mm.
By Jove, that sort of carried on. Even when we were here at the Rangitiki Club, blokes used to ride their bike down here and get their flagons and away home.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
So was there a much heavier drinking then than now, you think?
Yes, they probably... They used to call it the 6 o'clock swill.
Yeah.
And everybody at 6 o'clock... used to fill their jugs up and that would be it, I suppose.
Yeah.
Some of them ran off the road, but not too bad.
Might take you half an hour to drink another couple of jugs.
Yes, that's right. Oh yeah.
But drink driving wasn't the demon then that it is now.
No.
Most of
you weren't a man unless you could down a jug after being in the pub during the day.
Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of people driving, having drunk a lot of alcohol, and.
Well, it's different now.
Oh yeah, now it's different.
Yeah, different altogether.
Yeah.
People drink more at home now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So were there many car accidents in
those
days?
Not too bad. not too bad at all, really.
No.
Mind you, there weren't the vehicles on the car, on the, and the cars weren't as powerful either. I think they sort of just chugged along, some of those cars, didn't they? Those old Model A Fords and...
Yeah. So they wouldn't be able to run away from the cops like the young ones do now.
No. No, I can remember I had a... The first car that I had when I went onto the road first was a 1936 Ford Coupe.
V8?
V8. You know, that was the first car that I drove, because we were supplied with vehicles as a stock agent. And I used to think it was blooming dangerous, because they had the old mechanical brakes. Never had good brakes on them at all.
No.
Yeah. And yet it had this powerful motor. A V8 motor.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
So with driving in it, could you start driving very young? Do people drive very young?
I remember getting my license when I was just a boy. When I first joined the old Loan and Mercantile, the manager said to me, he said, you better get your license. And, of course, I'd driven my father's car. He had an old Model T. An old original Model T.
Gosh.
Yeah. And so I learned to drive. Then he got a Model A Ford. So that was sort of a little bit better. And then I got shifted down to Milton at one stage. And I worked in a store there with the Loan and Mercantile looked after the store. And that's when he said to me, you better to get your license. So he had a Dodge, a 1936 Dodge. Well, that was some car.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I used to watch him. I used to watch him when he used to pull up, and he's always in a blooming hurry. And he'd stop and he'd say, the front of it would go up and down. Oh, it was a marvellous car, really. Marvellous springing.
Yeah.
So that's how I got my licence in that car.
Okay. Was it difficult
to get
pass
my license?
The test? Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
He just drove up the road.
Yeah.
And he said, now, stop on this hill up here. And he said, and then get going again.
Yeah.
You see, and then I had to turn round.
Yeah.
And then I came down the hill.
So you had a hill start. Was it a 3-point turn did you have to do?
Had to turn around and then back round again and then straight up again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And was there a written part of the test?
The what?
A written part on paper where you...
No, I never had to go through
like
that. No
road code to learn?
I think they asked you questions, didn't they?
Oh, they did,
but there was no written answers.
Yeah.
Because I know I was a bit like Cliff. I got mine the day I was 15.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they never asked, how long have you been driving? Because my father had bad heart trouble, so I had to drive our car because Mum couldn't drive.
Yeah.
And
I
drove from about 11. The age of 11,
yeah.
You know, with my father sitting beside me.
Yeah.
And that was an old Buick, you know, with no synchromesh gears. So, you know, I had to double the clutch and everything.
Oh, did you?
Sit on a box.
Yeah.
So were the police monitoring the traffic, or were the special traffic?
We had traffic cops.
Traffic cops used to take us.
Yeah.
This was out in the country, of course, too.
Yeah.
I never had to go into town to get that done. Well, town was really just a place where, there might have been 3,000 people lived in Milton, or it mightn't be that number, 2,000 perhaps.
Yeah. But, of course, there wouldn't be speed cameras and things, so how would they know if you were going too fast? Were there speed restrictions on the roads?
Yes, there was. I can remember George Peru.
Oh, from here, yeah.
He didn't have a very good name.
No.
But I can remember he caught my uncle, and there's photos of this thing on the side of his car, you know, about 15 inches across.
Yeah.
And that was those early radar detectors.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Prior to that, I think they used two traffic officers at a specified distance apart, one with a flag and one with a stopwatch.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
So did you have, were the clubs and things to go to in the evenings when you were working?
Or? Was there what?
When you were working, was there a sort of social life in the evenings, or... The 6 o'clock school, was that just Fridays or every day through the week?
It was for a lot of people, yeah.
Yeah.
They were there every night.
Yeah, okay.
At that hour, yeah. Mm. No, that never ever happened as far as I was concerned, because I was sort of working late and I never quite knew what time I was going to be home.
Okay, so what sort of hours were you working?
During drafting years, during the drafting season, you know, it's starting early, and sometimes I'd come home and at lunchtime, and I'd go and have a sleep, then go out again after about 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock and draft some more, and then draft it well on into the day, and then just come home and get on the bloomin' phone and.
Mm.
In the meantime, the freezing works themselves would have rung home and given my wife the results over the phone.
Okay.
So I'd be ringing those up at
the results
night.
Are the weight of the stock that to be.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay. So were there many people doing your work in this area, or for freezing works they'd have?
There were two of us for the Longburn freezing works, which is. Down, you know where Longburn is?
Yes.
Yeah. There were two of us here in this area.
How far did your area go, Cliff?
Oh, I had a big area. I used to go right up to Appity, which is, you know, Appity, where Appity is.
Past Kimbolton.
Way up past Kimbolton.
Yeah.
And I used to have one or two blokes at Rangawa here. I never did much up there because I just. It was sort of, it suited me to have one or two up there in the Appity district. It suited me too because they were a bit later.
Yeah, they would be.
Yeah.
Mm.
So.
How far south?
Yeah, you know, I used to go right to the coast.
Nice.
Right down through Bulls and down to Flockhouse and down in there.
Yes.
Yeah, there were quite a few clients down in there. You remember Dennis Harris?
Yes.
Used to have a carrying business?
Yes, Dennis Harris.
He had a place down in there.
Did he?
Bob Wolford, and here's another one. They were great properties too.
So what would you do in the evenings?
Telephone.
On the telephone, mostly.
Oh, yeah.
Jacking up for next week. Talking about, you know, what was needed or what the farmer wanted. He wanted to draft this week or next week or
and you'd report back to the farmers about the stock that had gone through the works.
Always had to do that every night.
And at some stage you would have to get your space allocation for that week too.
That's right.
And if it was dry weather, you know, you could never get enough space, could you?
No, well, of course, that was with this big increase in the numbers of sheep that were farmed. Space used to be a real, when of course we call space our killing space.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody had an allocation.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'd ring up. I think at the busy time of the year, real busy time of the year, I used to have 1,000 a day. And then that would And there used to be one week that I used to have 6,000, space for 6,000. And that was always used to be, I think, just before Christmas or the first week in January. I'm not just too sure now. and that was the biggest week that I used to have, and that really was a big week, I tell you. Yeah. You should be pleased to get that one over.
Yeah.
And it's, of course, it's the people you're dealing with too.
Yeah, yeah.
Some great people you deal with too. They love. Yeah, I used to just love that. How you could go and talk to people. Mind you, you get to know all the families too.
Yeah.
See, what you're doing, really, as a stock buyer, you're handling their money.
Yeah.
That's their main income for the year.
Yeah, and they'd have once a year they're selling stock to the works.
Oh, no, more than once.
Oh, okay.
Or there'd be several. It might be several drafts.
Okay.
Yeah. It'd be, I suppose, the ordinary lot would be four or five drafts anyway.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz. Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.